Patrick, thanks so much for doing this. How you hanging in?
I'm hanging in there, fellas, with this craziness that's going on all over the world. Just trying to stay safe and trying to keep my family safe.
Yeah, man, we want to touch on a few different things with you, but yeah, Ben mentioned it. You're the head coach at Georgetown, and we're not sure what the future of the NCAA is going to be, especially as there's pro sports. Like, they're on hold. We didn't see a tournament. How has this changed your recruiting, and especially when it comes to, hey, you might have guys back from the year before, you don't have certainty of what's happening, and now there's this added element of potentially guys being able to go seek money in the G League earlier than playing in college.
Well, first of all, in terms of the recruiting, you still got to recruit. You still have to prepare. You still have to think as if there's going to be a season next year. There will be a season next year, in my opinion, but you just don't know when it's going to start. Is the first semester of school going to be pushed back, or is some of it going to be online? We're not sure yet. But so we still have to do our due diligence, and we still have to do our jobs in terms of trying to get the best talent that we can. To put ourselves in a position to win when once the season starts. In terms of the G League and kids going to the G League, we as college coaches have to do the best job we can to sell our program, sell our school, sell education. I know we here at Georgetown, we're big on education. We are fortunate enough to have a school that has great academics and also great athletics and a rich tradition. So those are the things I try to sell kids on. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. Some people are gonna, want to go to the G League to try to, circumvent going to college to get to the NBA sooner. Some people will make it and some people won't. But what I talk about to kids is that making sure that they have a backup plan so that if that doesn't work, an education will be something that they can always fall back on.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, your program, the academics there are incredible at Georgetown, and it makes a lot of sense for a lot of players. But would you also concede that some of these guys, it does make a little more sense to get paid right away to go into a professional environment like the G League, or would you advise everybody to at least investigate the NCAA route?
I think everybody has to do their due diligence. There are a lot of people who don't want to go to school, so then that's the avenue they want to go. But going straight to the G League is not for everybody. It all depends on which G League are you going to. I know they established a new one where I think you just play a condensed schedule. But the original G League, it's a dog eat dog world. Everybody's in there trying to do the best they can to, showcase their talent so that they can get called up. The travel situation is much different than being in the NBA. You're riding on buses, everywhere in all vans. You're playing in smaller arenas. There's not a lot of fanfare. There's not a lot of crowds there. So it's a lot different. And in college, you have a little bit of everything. You'll be playing in huge arenas. You're traveling on planes when you're going to your games. Yes, you have to go to class, but that's all part of life.
So we had on your former coach Jeff Van Gundy the other day, and he basically just expressed concern with development when it came to kids, and yeah, same thing with just understanding the type of path that you are going to be on. The other thing that he mentioned is that he's not watching The Last Dance, and I don't think you are either. And his explanation was, I don't need to see the documentary, I lived it. But has it been just, what's it been like having to have all these old memories resurface, especially since there's a lot of painful ones?
Even if you're not watching, and I watch a little bit of it, even when you don't watch it, people are always calling. People are always calling for
Yeah.
interviews. So you're always talking about it in some form or another. Look, Michael was a great player. He was definitely one of the best players to ever play this game, and we had a lot of wars against him and the Bulls to try to get to the finals. Unfortunately, he beat us most times, But look, we, you know, when you're playing against anybody, when you're, if they are better than you, you have to think that you are capable of beating them, or you know, everyone who's competitive has to think that way. And unfortunately, we fell short most of the time.
Talking to Patrick Ewing, did they have to work hard on convincing you to be a part of it?
Yes, but you know, I didn't know it was going to be as detailed as it came out to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one thing that has been actually surprising to me, is being able to acquire these interviews. I was pretty surprised that, you know, they convinced a guy like Isaiah Thomas to sit down and go over all of these things and rehash all of this and be willing to do it. Because, yeah, man, that is kind of what is lost in this, is that, you know, you've got to rehash old stuff, and then things end up coming out and guys end up taking, you know, shots at each other from stuff that happened, you know, 20 plus years ago. Like, I don't know if you saw the comments that Charles Oakley made. I think it was a day or two ago. But he basically put the Bulls loss in 93 on you, saying that you settled for too many fadeaways in crunch time against double teams. Like, what's your reaction to hearing that, when it's like, again, time is, there's been such a huge gap between now and then, that now you're having to relive this stuff and hearing things from former teammates like that?
Well, I mean, look, I have nothing to say about what Charles has to say. He was one of my best teammates. We went into a lot of wars, and a lot of wars against the Bulls. So everyone is entitled to their own opinion. You know, I love Charles Oakley, still consider him a friend, but everybody's entitled to what to think or say what they want.
So again, Michael hated his rivals. You were one of them that went all the way even back to college, and yet you were an assistant in Charlotte, and so he couldn't have hated you too much. What was your relationship like? How did it evolve from one where, yeah, your guys and it's you and Anthony Mason and other people trying to throw him and Scottie Pippen to the floor, to him being like, yeah, come be a part of my organization, come be a part of my bench, and be a part of my day-to-day?
Well, you know, Michael and I have been friends since high school. You know, we first met when I was on my visit at North Carolina. He was already committed, but he was there with his sister, showing her around. So, you know, we've developed a friendship from then, and it continued to grow as time went on. We played together in the McDonald's All-American game. We played against each other, you know, Georgetown against North Carolina. Unfortunately, we lost. You know, we just became friends, and, you know, he gave me my start in coaching. You know, he and I were represented by the same agent. So when I was talking to him one day about, you know, that I was going to retire, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to do something, he suggested that I come and work here in Washington with the Wizards and start as an assistant coach. If I didn't like that, he would move me to the front office. So that's, you know, he's already he started me in coaching. So, you know, our friendship has always been there. Our friendship is still strong. And even though when you're playing against each other, even though you're maybe friends or brothers or whatever, you know, your goal is to try to help your team to win. So you do by any means necessary. So if it is to knock his butt on the floor, you try to put his butt on the floor. But unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen. They won. But in terms of working for him in Charlotte, yes, Steve Clifford was the head coach who we hired. And Steve Clifford and I worked together starting from when I was in Houston. Both he and I and Jeff Van Gundy worked together. And, you know, we then worked in Orlando and then in Charlotte. So, you know, Michael and I had a great friendship, and Steve Clifford and I also had a great friendship. So that's how I wound up in Charlotte.
Well, yeah, you said you played with them when you were young and when you were kids, but you also played with them in the famous Monte Carlo game. I've always wondered, how did they pick those sides? Because it's you, Pippen, Malone on one team. But, like, how did you determine who was going to play on which team?
Well, that's all the coaches. You know, they you switch it up all the time. Michael and Magic will be on sometime, but Michael never wanted to be on the same team as Magic because, you know, they're always, who's going to be who's next up? Who's the Bull? Who's going to lead the NBA? You know, those guys were never really on the same team. Only a time they were on the same team was when the game started. So plus they're always talking so much trash. So, you know, the teams would be split up. Of course, myself and Dave Rahm is always on opposite because we're the two centers. So, you know, it would just mismatch.
So did you, when you were in that game, like, it has become this just amazing thing of legend, right, that everyone discusses, and even when we compare who's the best players on the planet, we always discuss, well, if there's a Monte Carlo game now, who goes where, who's the alpha, who plays on what team, how does this work out? Like, was there a point during that game where you're like, holy crap, this is really serious, like, I'm going to have to ramp this up, Michael's in this? Did you learn something about yourself in that game or something about even playing with a guy like Michael Jordan?
No, because we're all alphas. Everyone on that team was an alpha, you know. But we learned what we had to do to come together as a team to be able to win. Michael Jordan was one of the greatest players to play in the game, but everybody think that they were just as good as Michael. You know, that's what made all of us good. But we also knew that, you know, we are representing the United States, and we wanted to make sure that we put forth the best. To put on the best show that we can to represent this country.
Yeah, and you did that very well. Unfortunately, you lost those the gold medals, apparently, in a story you just recently told, and you got them back. So that's good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Glad that you've recovered them.
Yeah, that would have been awful. Yeah, was that?
I mean, you have a lot of awards. You have a lot of rewards. But I would still imagine that being a member of the Dream Team and having the gold medals is like, yeah, I'd like to have those.
Definitely. But you know, the funny thing is, you know, in '84 we also played in the Olympics. Myself, Michael, and Chris Mullin. We all three played in the Olympics in '84. But and also, we played on the Dream Team. So our 84 Olympic team was also a very good team. But the Dream Team is the best. It's the first and it's the best Dream Team of all. You know, everyone on that team was a star in his own right, and we were led by, yes, Michael Jordan.
Yeah. And, you know, all those stories are so great. The doc has been great, and I'm glad that you're a part of it, even though you needed some convincing. And I'm glad you joined us today, Patrick. Thanks so much for doing this, and best of luck going forward, and stay safe.
No, I appreciate it. You know, I decided to do it because, one, I have a lot of family in Canada, and Canada is a country that we'd want to recruit often.
That's
smart. That's smart.
I really hope that a smart kid who's interested in getting good grades at a really nice school is listening to this and wants to meet Patrick Ewing and maybe take a call.
There you go. I appreciate that, fellas.